Hello and welcome everyone to Scotland's Rural College podcast discussion series here at the 2019 Royal Highland Show, taking a fresh look at some of the major issues facing modern Scottish agriculture, as well as offering the chance for you, the public, to put your questions to our panel of experts. I'm Sian Hickson, and our episode today is called The Rise of the Machines. Joining me are Dr. Holly Ferguson, Dr. Simon Gibson-Poole, and Professor Eileen Wall. Holly is a precision dairying scientist at SRUC. Her research background is in the use of technologies such as rumination activity collars and pH boluses in the early detection of metabolic diseases of cattle and sheep. She uses technology on a daily basis on the farm and has recently been looking at innovative practices to improve resilience in dairy, including an examination of the reasons people might choose not to integrate with new technologies. Eileen is an integrative livestock geneticist and head of research at SRUC. Her work explores how machines can help us define the characteristics of animals and how we can gather and apply data to improve health and productivity. She's also president of the British Society of Animal Science. And finally, Simon is a postdoctoral researcher exploring new ways of applying technology for agricultural and environmental uses. His current work focuses on ways of detecting disease in seed potato crops using drones and geographical information systems, and he's also involved with the monitoring of invasive non-native species populations. Thank you all for joining me today.
Thank you.
So let's begin. We've come a long way from the days of the sort of feared annual June survey, but I'd like to ask you all, what sort of things are we currently doing in Scotland?
So we're doing a lot of work in Scotland. In fact, Scotland is leading the way in how we can actually use the combination of both technology and data to help improve efficiency, understanding how our plants are growing and when to harvest them, and similarly with animals, the exact same question. Where we might need to be doing a bit more is how do we translate that to farmers in a way that they can digest it and use it in the most meaningful way, rather than just generating gigabytes of data, difficult for us to interpret, even more difficult for them to interpret.
Yes, sorry, Holly.
I just say, I would say technology is becoming a lot more commonplace on farms, and you see a lot more farmers using technology in their day-to-day life, but I still find that a lot of farmers don't class themselves as using precision livestock technologies. And you speak to them and ask them if they use anything on farm, and they'll say no, but in actual fact they do, they just don't think of it as a precision livestock tool, but they're using it on a day-to-day basis.
It's similarly with technology like drones. Some farmers I speak to, there are some that will always uptake technology fairly readily, but a lot of them are not necessarily keen or don't necessarily know exactly, you know, what's available or what it can do. So sometimes just getting that message out there is sometimes a challenge to sort of overcome.
So what issues would you say we were hoping to tackle with technology and artificial intelligence, and what are the potential benefits to the user for using these strategies?
I mean, talking from remote sensing kind of viewpoint, some of the main benefits you can get basically is being able to visualise crops and areas like that, but without sort of impacting the fields themselves. So essentially reducing your traversing across the fields, but also reducing inputs going in. So if you can find ways of tackling the emergence of disease or understanding nutrients in your crops better, you can be smarter about how you put inputs back in the field, reducing the quantity put in, which saves you money in the long run, but also is a benefit to the environment as well, because the less pesticides you put on, or the less fertilizers you put on, the less will get run off into the environment and cause other potential issues. So that's one benefit, certainly for remote sensing viewpoint.
Yeah, there's a lot of the large agrochemical and machinery companies have been doing a lot of work in this area, and for example, we know that about 250 of the common weeds have become resistant to some of the herbicides that we use out there, and I'm looking at my figures, and nearly £50 billion of crop dollars of crops are lost in the US and Canada due to weeds. So the use of precision technologies and the combination of them, both on machines, drones, in terms of targeting treatments, targeting sowings, has been estimated to reduce the amount of herbicides used by 90%, so therefore getting rid of some of those risks of resistant weeds. and then also minimising those losses due to weeds.
I would say for myself, precision livestock technologies to me are about improving health, welfare and production in cattle. It's about early detection of diseases and disorders. And I think one of the main things to remember is that precision livestock technologies aren't meant to replace the farmer. They're meant to help them and make their lives easier.
But there is an issue. The labour workforce available for agriculture is going down. There's less labour inputs available out there. So actually precision technologies might be the only way that we could keep agriculture going, because there's not the people out there willing to do the work.
Yeah, that's definitely true. That's you obviously see that in a lot of sort of combined technologies, when you've got things like remote sensing, whether it's from aircraft or satellites, and also sort of tractor cab base and areas like that. If you can automate more, you can basically have almost 24/7 operations going on in a farm. Certainly, the concepts of the future is you could have 24/7 operations, with essentially the farmer almost becoming a sort of a maintainer, an engineer, as it were, making sure the fleet of the robotic equipment is operating efficiently. Less kind of field walking and more monitoring of the data.
Yeah, it's happened in all the other major industries. So agriculture might be one of the last adopters of making that routine.
Well, I think that raises an important issue. Agriculture is often seen as quite a traditional, perhaps small-c conservative industry. What do you think some of the pitfalls might be in terms of introducing what is essentially a very cutting-edge technology into an industry where the average age is 58, and perhaps we're not also providing the support networks for people to become accustomed to using these technologies and systems?
I found when speaking to farmers, one of the big things that was coming out was that people were worried that they were going to be sort of drowning in data but starved of information. So they were going to be creating a huge amount of data off their farm, but they weren't going to be sure how to make the most of it. So they get technology, and then do they maybe just do the bare minimum with it as opposed to using it to the best of its ability? Or do they collect this data and then they're too scared to look at it, so it just sort of sits there gathering dust as opposed to be used appropriately?
Yeah, so we know that the sort of exponential rise in the amount of data that's being generated around the world, and the amount of data points farmers probably aren't even aware they're generating that are being mined in some way. And all of us as users and wearers of tech probably aren't aware about what's really happening, this sort of big brother view of the world. And I do think, yes, the generational issue that is will particularly compound the problem for our farming industry about how to even look at the information, let alone interpret it and manage their operations appropriately. So there is a massive need to consider the digital skills and the data skills and the constant need to retraining, because as these technologies become more deployable and more affordable, actually, instead of high-tech machineries being only available to sort of large corporate types of farms, you could actually have a lot of misrepresentation and different competing, small fly-by-the-seat-of-your-pants types of companies going down farm tracks and actually sending very conflicting messages. So I think we really do need to identify that digital skills is possibly critical to us, agriculture, particularly in Scotland, being able to deploy it. But as it becomes cheaper, actually, instead of it being this sort of precision agriculture, it could become available for all farms, regardless of size. So even the crofters could afford this and deploy it and use it.
I think we'll touch on the financing of these schemes in a minute, but I wanted to raise the point that even before this generation and perhaps the uneven balance of digital skills between different ages of people in the industry, there have always been people that were excluded or left behind from, say, the maintaining of the herd books was a system that perhaps required a level of education or familiarity with systems that some farmers, because they left education, formal education, quite early, were lacking and therefore struggled with. So are there going to be, or are there, schemes in place to help farmers adapt to new technologies and to give them the necessary digital and information handling skills that they need to use these?
So there is a lot of some of the, well, not a lot, but there is some targeted focus in some of the rural development programs to help reskill and retrain and get the skills up there. However, is it a sort of a planned, coherent program of work? Probably not, because the technology is moving on so quickly that the things you would have presented last year are completely different and they've moved on another wave of information. So I think we actually probably need to get a bit more clever about how we deliver this information and not sort of the typical CPD points that farmers get for going along for an afternoon so they can get a bit of a payment. This actually needs to be continuous, ongoing, and probably a need to have some one-on-one training as well to actually get over that barrier that it isn't, you can jump in at a starting off point quite easily, and rather than this fear of being able to engage with it, as Holly was talking about.
Yes, Holly, is quick obsolescence a concern for people, do you think?
I think some people, yeah, they do sort of worry that they'll get things and, yeah, it becomes old hat very, very quickly. But I think companies are becoming aware of that, and they're trying to make user, you know, interfaces a lot easier to use, or they're trying to create systems that can work well with other systems. So look at combinations of sensors. So if there's something that you already use on farm, how it can work well with a new sensor to make the most of it. I think improving skills and improving kind of digital skills is so important, especially when we'd said that the, you know, the farming population, it is an ageing population. So if you've got a precision technology that can reduce your labour input, it's kind of the ideal a group to be using it.
So I know that this isn't that your research focuses on. Why else? Why might people not be adopting these technologies?
Yeah, we've been doing quite a lot of interviews with farmers and stakeholders to look at barriers to adoption of technology, and they can range from things like the initial fear of the inputs, you know, the money that's needed, and a lot of farms are already very over indebted, especially dairy farms with the fluctuation in the milk price, you know, the volatility. But it can even be things like the fear of being the one to invest in a new technology on farm. You don't want to be the risk taker. You don't want to invest in a new technology and it goes wrong and you kind of get the blame for ruining the farm. Or it can just be lack of understanding that people don't know what's the best for them. Should they be spending the money on this? You know, Jimmy down the road's got a different technology. Is that the one that you should be going for? It's just trying to teach them about there are loads of different technologies and they do different things. And for you, it might be one, or it might be a combination of sensors that could work a lot better for your farm.
Do you have an idea of what some of the costs involved are?
It kind of depends what you're looking at. For rumen boluses, they can be sort of £150 per bolus. Collars can be in the range of 100 to 200, depending on what you're looking for. And for things like the collars, it really needs to be a collar on every animal, so it depends how many cows you've got. But for things like boluses, they often say you can put a bolus in a quarter of your herd. But with research we've been looking at, we can see that there's such huge individual variation between animals, so you run the risk of missing animals that are struggling with diseases and disorders because you've chosen not to put a sensor on them. So it can be really difficult to decide where to begin.
I suppose you're looking at specifically at drones, obviously a relatively new technology that's coming around. They vary in price. Smaller scale systems are sort of around a couple of £1,000s. But that's a kind of that kind of aircraft. You've got multiple uses. It's not just for sort of remote sensing of crops and things like that. But you could use it to check distances to water courses for your boundaries of your field. You could use it for just actually on the farm steading as well to check things like roofing, guttering, difficult to get to places. You could when the weather's been a little bit drier and you can start seeing field drains and such like coming through the crop, so you can identify where the locations are. If you're not quite sure where they were, if they were put in sort of in the 50s or 60s or something, you know roughly where they are in the field, but from the air you can basically pick them out to get a better idea. So they're multiple, you can get multiple uses out of one piece of equipment. It's not necessarily one piece of equipment for one job. It can have multiple uses. And similarly in the environmental sector as well, the use of this kind of technology, again, for survey work or for checking things out, it's got uses from river morphology modelling looking at wildlife, sort of checking out bird nests and things like that, counts of animals. So there's multiple uses from the same sort of piece of kit.
It can be free. Some of these, Simon's talking about the drones. Some of those are out there mapping all the time. Actually, a lot of that's been integrated to develop forecasting, crop growth models. And some of that could potentially, depending on how we legislate, I don't necessarily like that word, but depending on how these things can be connected, most of this data is likely to be stored in the cloud in the future. So actually it is accessible. It is not sitting on servers in IBM somewhere, never to be entered except through lock and key. You know, there could be ways of integrating this, so it's beneficial for all, but there does need to be a lot of potential cooperation frameworks put in place for that to happen. But it is beginning to happen.
Yes, I think we've come a long way in 20 years, and some of that was spurred on by the foot-and-mouth outbreak of 2001. Do you think that electronic identification systems could play a role in stopping or mitigating the effects of a similar crisis?
Yeah, having helped coordinate some of the calls as a PhD student during the foot-and-mouth crisis, it was not a pleasant thing to see happening. And a lot of the problem was we didn't know what animals existed where, which is why the cattle tracing system was ramped up in the way it was. And it really, you know, looking at playing out disease scenarios, having that in place will massively not let something like that happen again. So it could be improved by linking it through tracing systems, from sort of being able to monitor if you're flying over all the time. You know, there's something flying over the fields of Scotland all the time, satellites. You could actually, through sort of having some of the drones that Simon works with, really real-time mapping where our animals are, where they're interacting with wildlife, all the things that are causing concerns in terms of disease and new disease incursions. You know, we are really trying our best to make sure that we've got all the ducks in a row.
With some of these technologies, especially currently with the way drones specifically work, some of the limitations, so this, the future use and the way they could be used for continuous monitoring, kind of curtailed a little bit by the current regulations that are currently in place. So the way it works at the moment with drones specifically is that you have to have a human in the loop. There must be somebody basically within visual line of sight of the drone, which does cut down the effectiveness of the aircraft. They're obviously useful. You can take them out, you can do field walking and all that sort of stuff. But if you want a continuous monitoring system, you need to have a fully autonomous system where the farmer or whoever is basically just monitoring the output. They're not actually monitoring the flight. So it's something which is not currently legally allowed to do. Aircraft are capable of doing it. We know that in Israel, for instance, there's a company in Israel which has been developing aircraft which have their own little box which they can charge themselves up in, so they're fully autonomous. They can take off from this aircraft when the weather is good, when the conditions are correct, go and do whatever tasks they've been assigned to do, put themselves back in a box, charge themselves up, and just continuous 24/7 operations. Mostly they're being used for large industrial applications at this moment in time, for a variety of roles, for security of the site, for monitoring sensitive equipment, sort of gas flues and things like that. But that's occurring now, so it is starting to occur. So you can see that 5 years' time, perhaps once regulations actually start to change, that level of technology could come to farms, especially if it's made cheap enough. Getting it cheap enough is a difficult bit.
What is the reason behind the law having humans in the loop?
Safety. It's just purely safety. The aircraft industry, the airline industry in general, is extremely safety conscious. So, you know, if you've got a human in the loop, you're monitoring the aircraft. It's more monitoring. It's not the fact that you're expecting it to do something wrong. You're monitoring the airspace around and also the ground space around. So we have to make sure that we get out of the way of any form of manned aircraft, be it a paraglider, a microlight, or a light aircraft. And likewise, if there's people, you know, obviously in Scotland, we have right to roam, so we can have you know, people wandering around the fields, walking dogs, whatever. We have to make sure that we're not impacting them, and we have to get out of their way. So it's making sure drone technology, any form of aircraft technology, can basically sense and avoid those things. And at the moment, they can't do that, so the regulations restrain us.
We're looking now at systems that go beyond tracking movement and tracking disease in crops to tracking things such as heart rate and estrus detection. Are we going over the top? How much information do we really need?
A lot of that actually is being driven by advances in healthcare and precision treatments in healthcare, and actually agriculture is just following the trend in that. So probably not is how I feel about it. We're probably not doing enough. We're not integrating it with some of the potential penicide testing, some of the genetic analysis that's happening in the medical sector, where they estimate the integration of these relatively cheap to deploy. You know, you're talking you could do whole genome sequencing by a bed in a couple of years' time for a couple of hundred dollars. They're estimating that could reduce the amount of drugs used by something like 40% in America, and there's the associated problems with that, and particularly when we're thinking about in the UK where we may be with our sourcing of drugs in the future. So yes, I think we need to be doing more, particularly given things like health, where you're putting drugs into a primary source of your food chain. So I think we probably, it's reliant on us to do more so we don't have things like antimicrobial resistance and antibiotic resistance happening out there.
I would agree with Eileen. I think we should be pushing to do more. Like I said earlier, the big thing with precision livestock technologies is earlier detection of diseases and disorders. And the really important bit about that is you're managing to treat an animal before the disease worsens and before you need an antibiotic intervention. So it's reducing the use of antibiotics on farm, reducing any risk of antibiotics in the food chain, just really reducing medicinal use on farm and improving animal health welfare.
And I know, Simon, along with the benefits that we've just cited, you are interested in some of the environmental benefits that the use of drones in particular can bring.
Yes, I mean, obviously, from the agricultural perspective, if we can reduce inputs into crops and things like that to do with both fertiliser inputs and pesticide inputs, they both have a knock-on benefit on improving the environment. But the technology itself can be used for multiple reasons. So we've got master students at the moment who are looking at a river system up in the Spey catchment up in the Highlands, and that's looking at salmon habitat. So it seems a bit of a strange thing, using a drone to identify ways of improving habitat for salmon, but it's just another potential use. You can use these things for mapping of pretty much any form of surface, so construction industry, mining industry, but environmental as well. So anything where you're trying to pick up or survey larger areas that are easily surveyable from the ground, you can do from the air. So it has a lot of benefits in different areas. Another area we're looking at is invasive species management, which is a bit of a problem. So for the UK economy, it's estimated to cost about 1.7 billion a year across a range of different environmental invasive species. So it's not just plant species, but animal species as well. And we know that remote sensing using either drones or satellites or light aircraft can have a benefit to that. So it's a way of being able to pick up where these species are or where they're starting from, and also identify vectors. So if you can survey from the ground, perhaps along a waterway, for instance, for an invasive species, and identify, okay, we know it's in this area of the river, but you may not be able to see in the fields sort of 100 metres beyond the side of the riverbank. If you're using a light aircraft or if you're using a drone, you have a bigger spread of area for your survey. You can basically identify those potential areas and therefore the vectors of an invasion onto the area that you're actually interested in. So it's a way of expanding your survey work.
And finally, to all of you, I'd like to know, what are your hopes and fears for what these technologies could hold for the future? Eileen, can we start with you?
I'm fearful of misuse and mis-selling to perhaps a digitally or technologically naive farming community, and therefore misuse in application. Particularly when we're going down to potentially some of the animal health and welfare benefits or disbenefits if they are being misused. So I would really like to see some major consideration of the digital skills of the communities that we're expecting to use these technologies and interpret information. But I think once that hurdle is overcome and it's used responsibly and in a cooperative framework, it has huge, huge potential for revolutionising our agriculture.
How can farmers know what's good? Because if we're talking about mis-selling without an education program that goes along with it. And obviously it is a concern, especially as an emerging market, that people are going to come in and take advantage of that.
So that's why I would really like to see not just the education platform, but the open source type of approach, which, you know, is being used to a certain extent in the pharma to interpret all the information from sensors, largely driven by the companies like Apple and Intel, because they know so many of it is through competitive organisations. So I'd like to think if we get the collaborative, cooperative approach to looking and interpreting data from across these platforms, that some of that risk is taken out of the system. But it does require, yeah, some oversight. And I don't like necessarily like government regulations, but I think data ombudsman or data use ombudsman might be required.
Holly, what are your thoughts?
I would say, again, my fear is probably the lack of understanding of people and the lack of uptake of technology for people whom it could really benefit. You know, they maybe don't understand how it can affect them on farm, or the sort of farmers that are just, instead of being the ones that are constantly pushing for something new, are the ones that are really struggling. It's the farmers that are sitting in the middle and sort of bumping along quite happily. They're making enough money to keep going, but they maybe don't see the point in investing in a new technology when it's such a big output to begin with. But just trying to get across to these people that, yes, you're bumping along quite nicely in the middle, but you could be doing a lot more. You know, you could be improving the health, welfare and production of the animals, which could in turn improve your finances. And I think my hope for the future for the precision livestock technologies is, again, just to really push for improved health, welfare and production in the UK herd. And hopefully we can start to see sort of a decrease in the number of Scottish dairies that we're losing every year. You know, we're down to 902 from 5,000 years ago. You know, we're losing a lot of dairies. So if we can try to improve the health, welfare and production of the herd, we can hopefully try to hang on to dairying in the UK.
And how can we encourage the sharing of data and information between dairies and farmers? And does that bump up against any of the regulations that govern wider data sharing, such as GDPR?
We do a lot of open days on farm. So speaking to people about the technology that we're using on farm or the research projects that we've been doing. So just trying to share with people what the technology actually does for us and how it can maybe fit on their farm. But there are a lot of farmer groups, farmer discussion groups, so there is a lot of ways to get this information and to get the information from people who are using the technology firsthand, or from people who've got farms like yours, farms slightly different than yours, just to see how it could fit on your farm.
And Simon?
Hey, so obviously from the perspective of drones again, I'm droning on about drones quite a lot, it's obviously this is the kind of technology that could be misused quite a lot. We've already seen that with the events at Gatwick last year, people flying over our runways and things like that. So that's always going to be a negative aspect of the technology. It's unavoidable to a certain degree, although the government itself are bringing in some new concepts, so ways of terminology called geofencing, which is potential that any new equipment that could get made in the future will have to kind of have these geofence rules put in. It's kind of similar sort of technology that actually comes into livestock as well, with things like virtual fencing for livestock. Mm-hmm. It's a way basically of being able to get your piece of equipment, or in the case of livestock, it could be cattle, that is constrained by GPS information, so there's areas with which it cannot go. So there's another government is thinking about ways of using that to basically make sure that any new equipment in the future can't enter areas like airports and over prisons and things like that. So that will make it safer from a general usability case, because people won't be able to do silly things with them. But the actual technology itself, I mean, it has, you know, vast benefits. And if we can get to the point where these aircraft also do have active sense and avoid technologies, can basically see other aircraft and or other threats to themselves and can react against them, they will naturally become safer anyway. And I think that's the same case for a lot of farm machinery. If you're thinking about driverless tractors and that sort of area, it's one where the area where they're pushing quite a lot. We see with driverless cars, of course, as well. You know, the vehicles being able to detect their surroundings effectively enough to make decisions to make them safer to stop before they run somebody over or run into cattle or sheep or something like that. So all these features, they're still requiring improvement, but And I think definitely in the future we're gonna see quite an explosion once that level of safety has been built in. So,
thank you very much. I'd like to open it up now to questions from the audience. Please put up your hand if you have a question, and you will be supplied with a microphone.
Thank you. This is a question for anyone, really. A few years ago, GPS was deployed in tractors and combines several years before it's now commonplace in cars. We all use GPS pretty much every day now. I was wondering if there's anything that you see it's being used in agriculture at the minute, that the seeds might be sown for something that you might see more widely used in everyday life further down the line. Is there anything in agriculture?
Specifically for GPS technologies?
No, any technology, any kind of technology you think might be.
I believe that facial recognition for pigs is currently more accurate than facial recognition for humans.
Yes, and I believe they've also been doing that with cattle as well over in America. There's technologies. I mean, I think quite often agriculture probably brings on ideas that have been in other places. But trying to think of anything particular, I can't.
No, I would say a lot of the sensors that we use in agriculture, we already take from, you know, human medicine or from aircraft engineering or from other places. It tends to be that we're pulling across sensors we can see uses for in agriculture. You know, so thermal imaging coming from military, and then we're using it to detect mastitis. Or we've got ketone sensors that we're using for milk head space in cattle, but they're originally intended for humans on the Atkins diet. So it's really just looking at sensors and thinking, how could we use it in a different way for the animals at the moment?
The one area where it may be most interesting to see it is around understanding disease and disease transmission in populations, and particularly when you start dropping in sensors into it and animal location. So a lot of the sort of artificial intelligence about mapping disease spread has sort of really taken off, particularly from crops, then translating into livestock and its interaction with wild, and beginning to feed into the human side of things. So I would say that would be, I think, crop disease mapping and the more hard predictive analytics is where agriculture is probably leading above human use because of actually some of the GDPR issues that have been raised. So we've been taking a lead in those types of areas, I would say.
Thank you.
Any more questions? In that case, Dr. Simon Gibson-Poole, Dr. Holly Ferguson and Professor Eileen Wall, thank you very much for joining me today.
Thank you.